We are in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, and we've reached Canto 4, the Triple Soul Forces. These soul forces of Savitri Soul present themselves in the form of three goddesses, Madonnas, and we have read about the Madonna of Divine Pity and Compassion. We've heard the echo from the lower levels of nature, which shows that this soul power is not yet all powerful in the world. Its opposite can still revolt, and we recognize his revolt very, very clearly. And when he has spoken, Savitri replies to her being of pity. We read it last week. I think we'll read it again. Madonna of suffering. It's at the bottom of page 507. Madonna of suffering. Mother of grief divine, thou art a portion of my soul put forth to bear the unbearable sorrow of the wood, because thou art the wretched still can hope. But I'm sorry. Because thou art, men yield not to their doom, but ask for happiness and strive with fate. Because thou art, the wretched still can hope, but thine is the power to solace, not to save. One day I will return, a bringer of strength, and make thee drink from the Eternal's cup. His streams of force shall triumph in thy limbs, and wisdom's calm control thy passionate heart. Thy love shall be the bond of humankind, compassion the bright key of nature's acts. Misery shall pass, abolished from the earth. The world shall be freed from the anger of the beast, from the cruelty of the Titan and his pain. There shall be peace and joy forevermore. I think this passage is quite clear. Has anybody got anything they want to ask? Yes, Don.
I don't think that my question answers it really. But if such a wonderful world were to occur, the misery shall
pass, abolished from the earth.
How long could we live in this total happiness? Perhaps it's the condition or the way we human beings are at this moment, and we have yet to evolve. But
yes, that beast is in us, and that's why there's something in us which clings to all that pain. The Titan is cruel because he's suffering pain, but there's something in us which clings to all that resentment, and we always have this idea that peace and joy forevermore will just be very boring. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Compassion, the bright key of nature's acts, and so on there. If there's compassion, it means that there's misery somewhere. Otherwise, why is compassion not necessary unless there's unhappiness, misery, and something?
But
this
if,
is just passing through
if, our, if our spirit is full of compassion, there's no need for there to be any misery. We will avoid creating misery because
the compassion's unnecessary.
We will act with compassion always. You don't always have to be compassionate about people who are already in misery. Compassion wants to prevent misery, wants to avoid bringing about situations in which somebody else might suffer.
Join in the joy of others.
If love is the bond of humankind, that love will be really human unity, no? Yeah. Anyway, we see that some transformation is necessary to bring about that state.
I think also the understanding from compassion, for me it comes more that compassion is one very fine form of love, very refined love. It is not in the mental understanding how far compassion is with suffering, and you have to look at the suffering. It is a refined way of love. For me it comes more than I feel.
So, but as you very rightly point out, something very radical needs to change for this to happen. And that's Savitri's mission. And that's why she says, one day I will return. When I've fulfilled my mission, then I will be able to bring you all this strength which you are missing now. Now you look on helplessly. You feel very distressed by the suffering, but you can't do anything about it. I want to bring you strength.
But Don's question takes me to the title of the canto, the Triple Soul of Forces.
Yes.
I would enjoy your expanding on that. This is a compassion.
Compassion is one of the very, very beautiful forces, powers of the soul, yes. Or we can say love, divine love, is one of the very, very beautiful forces of the soul, which in our imperfect world expresses itself in wanting to solace suffering, feeling sympathy for suffering, wanting to eradicate suffering, but at present not being able to do that. So the next force is strength. That is what we are going to read about next. Yes.
What about the law of karma? How should we remember consider? Because they are very connected, this.
I don't really want to go into a long discourse on karma. But this morning I was remembering the first two verses of the Ishopanishad, which say, all this is a habitation for the Lord. All this is a habitation for the Lord. Everything that moves in this moving universe, by that renounced thou shouldst enjoy. Lust not after any man's possession. If we can renounce everything for ourselves and enjoy it for the Lord in us, no? He says, if you can do that, doing thus works in the world, if you can be active in the world in that spirit, you should wish to live 100 years. In this way, karma does not cling to a man. It means that you're living for the Lord, you're living in the Lord, and what we think of as karma, the consequences, don't cling to you personally, because you're not doing these things for yourself. So, I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. In the introduction of the new dawn that you have made available to us, it says, I am in the light. I am the light. No, I'm in the light. The light is in me, and I am the light. So this discussion is reminding me of that.
Yeah, yes.
Thank you very much for making that available to us.
Yes, I don't know whether there are any copies out today. We should always try to see to have them there. They are up here, so afterwards we'll put them out. Anybody would like to have them. So that's the promise. This soul force on its own is incomplete. It has the power to solace. Savitri pays tribute to this Madonna and how she is helping suffering humanity. But it's the power to solace, not to save. In order to save, she needs strength. So we will today we'll read about the next Madonna, the Madonna of Strength, on page 508. Margaret, you would read.
On past she. In her spirit's upward roof, an ardent grandeur climbed with ferns and rocks. A quiet wind flattered the heart to warmth. A finer perfume breathed from slender trees. All beautiful grew, subtle and high and strange. Here on a boulder calf, like a huge throne, a woman sat in gold and purple sheen, armed with a trident and a thunderbolt, her feet upon a couchant lion's back. A formidable smile curved round her lips. Heaven fire laughed in the corners of her eyes. Her body a mass of courage and heavenly strength. She managed the triumph of the nether gods.
Thank you. So this is the mother of might. It's a similar symbolic picture to the earlier one. The Madonna of Pity was sitting on the ground with a sharp stone beneath her feet. Here we've gone higher up the mountain. The air has changed, as it often does as we go up the mountain. And here she's sitting on a stone, but it's been beautifully carved like a throne. She's dressed like a queen in gold and purple sheen, and we recognize her weapons. These are the traditional weapons of Durga, the trident and the thunderbolt, and she's resting her feet upon a lion. He's lying peacefully there, couchant lion. He's part of her power, or he will express her power. He's very obedient to her. Her whole body is a mass of courage and heavenly strength, and she's there armed with her lion to menace the triumph of the nether gods, the gods who are ruling the lower levels of existence. And the smile, and the, if you remember these traditional images from Bengal at this time of year, well, she's got this fire in the corner of her eyes and her beautiful smile. This is just the time of the pujas.
And the moment is also Navratri time.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, yes.
Is there a significance in the gold and purple sheen? Durga is normally red, is she?
I think this is the purple and gold together. Mm-hmm. This expresses empire and sovereignty. The purple with gold thread passing through it. Jocelyn, you'll read.
The halo of lightning blend around the head, and sovereignty the great sisters zone their woe, and majesty and victory started her, guarding in the wide cosmic battlefield against the flat quality of death, and the all-leveling insurgent mind, the hierarchy of outer powers, the high changeless value, the eminence, the privileged aristocracy of truth, and in the governing idol son, the triumvirate of wisdom, love, and bliss, and the soul of progressively of the absolute light. Others on the seat in the inner world of mind, the mother of might looked down on the passing things, listened to the advancing thread of time, saw the irresistible meaning of the sun, and heard the thunder of the mouth of God.
Thank you. Don, you like to look up Cestus? That's what I thought it meant, and I have this image of presidents who have a...
Girdle means around the waist area.
Yeah, and when you say zoned, it also seems to mean around the waist.
Girdle in Greek.
That's all. But that's what it makes me think of. You know, the heads of state, they have a kind of special ribbon, and they wear their seal of their country or whatever it is. Here, this is sovereignty. The cestus, whatever it is that she's wearing, shows that she's a ruler. She's powerful.
It'd be interesting to put that word into Google images. Amazing things pop up.
Will you try that?
You will, everybody, just for the heck of it. I can only do it for me.
Well, you can...
I can't bring it.
You can send it to some of us.
Too many.
On the picture, would I paint it with a girl? It means August. August in the first seat. August.
August. We pronounce it differently. Here she's wearing a sari, and yes, she's got a golden belt with a big, big buckle. Yes, August. Of course, we have the month of the year, August, which is named after Caesar Augustus, who was the first Caesar, or the first emperor of the Roman Empire. and they named the month after him. And his name, Augustus, means majestic or imperious. So that is how she is. And somehow we mark this difference in English by pronouncing the two words differently. If it's the month, we say August, and if it's the adjective, we say August. What is she guarding? In the wide cosmic battlefield, she is guarding, protecting. She's protecting the hierarchy of the ordered powers, the way things have been set up, the hierarchy which reflects the truth, the divine truth. She's protecting the high, changeless values, the peaked eminences. She's not a democrat. She doesn't want everything flat and level. She's protecting the outstanding, the special qualities, no? The privileged aristocracy of truth. She's protecting the triumvirate. A triumvirate is when three people are governing. In this case, it's the triumvirate of wisdom, love, and bliss. But above that triumvirate, that government of three, there's the one, there's the sole autocracy of the absolute light. That is what is really the supreme ruler. I think this is the Jyoti Parasya, the light of the supreme, which shall illumine us with the truth.
What does it mean guarding in the wide cosmic battlefield against the fact?
She's guarding all these things which I just read,
yeah,
against the forces that want to flatten them all. No, the flat equality of death. Death is often pictured as a man with a scythe. He cuts everybody down to the same level. No, and the all-leveling insurgent night. Insurgents are people who rebel and bring down try to bring down the established order. In this case, it's the order of the truth. So these are the forces of falsehood that want to bring down these peaked eminences and all these.
Yeah, I was being literal with death. That's not
true. So she's sitting there, august, on her seat. And again, Sri Aurobindo tells us that this seat is in the inner mind. There's some discussion about where these goddesses are. We have passed through the worlds of the subtle physical and the vital and the mind. And then Savitri's gone quite a lot further. She's come to a place where she can feel the nearness of the soul. But then one by one, there seems to be a mountain to be climbed, and this place is in inner mind.
I wanted to say that I recently got interested in this idea of hierarchy.
Yes.
When I read the booklet from Sri Aurobindo Society, from Mother and Sri Aurobindo's works on true leadership, so maybe you're familiar with her passage where she says, hierarchy consists of two things. You have to have all the spots, all the spots occupied, and all the people filling those positions have to do their work properly, in other words, in the right way.
Everybody has to be in their right place.
To work.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the end. So here you can see that the powers of death and night, they work to flatten all that, so there is no hierarchy. So that's the destruction,
yes,
of the working collectivity.
Yes. I think Mother's even made a kind of diagram, no? of the hierarchy.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, that's also in that book.
And she said that here on earth, because of all the distortion and the ignorance and the incomplete evolution, people are not in their right places.
Exactly.
Mm. So that is somehow the, I suppose, the aspiration of democracy. I don't really want to say anything much against democracy. The idea is that maybe people are not in their right places in the way the outer order is established, and there should be a possibility for change. You know, that perhaps people who are born in very humble circumstances, they might have the inner and outer capacities to make a great difference.
Well, I think the way to ensure the hierarchy is that people want to surrender to the divine will.
Yeah.
If they're there for their own ambition or whatever, then you've got a problem.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And then the will organize everybody in the right way. Yeah.
Now, society also has to, the people up here are to do this and they can't do anything else. And the same here, and the same here, and the same here. And at the bottom may be perfectly, fantastically capable people who can't.
Mm. Yeah, are not allowed
or
to.
Or have a terrible job in climbing up in higher caste systems.
Yes.
But there should be an aristocracy, says the heresy, but it's a privileged aristocracy of truth.
Yes.
So the beings of truth are the ones that are...
So here there's a hierarchy described. No? At the top is the soul autocracy of the absolute light. And then there's the triumvirate, the three who rule equally, wisdom, love, and bliss. Then there's the privileged aristocracy of truth. And then here are these high, changeless values and peaked eminences. Oh. And all these are in order. So she's looking down on time, passing things, listening to time passing, evolution happening. She sees the wheeling of the suns, turning round and round, which in a way marks the passage of time. And she heard the thunder of the march of God, the armies of God on the march. Mm. This is on the cosmic battlefield.
But her job is to keep this.
To guard and protect. She's a great warrior. Yeah.
So she has a good job.
Yes.
I hope you all know the song, "Oh, When the Saints Go Marching."
Yes, that's a similar idea. So you'd read, Audrey?
Amid the swaying forces in their strife, sovereign was her word, the luminous command. Her speech, like a war cry, rang out a pilgrim chant. Charm restoring hope in failing hearts aspired the harmony of her puissant voice. O Savitri, I am thy secret soul. I have come down into the human world, and the movement watched by an unsleeping eye and the dark contrariety of Earth's fate and the battle of the bright and song follows. I stand upon earth's paths of danger and grief and help the unfortunate and save the doomed. To the strong I bring the guardian of their strength. To the weak I bring the armor of their force. To men who long I carried their coveted joy, I am fortunate justifying the great and wise by the sanction of the plaudits of the crowd, then trampling them with the armed heel of faith.
Thank you. So there's a battle going on. Amid the swaying forces in their strife. Sometimes one side seems to be stronger, and sometimes the other side seems to be stronger. There's a backwards and forwards movement. But where she goes, then the sound of her voice is like a charm, restoring hope in failing hearts. She has a powerful voice, a voice full of power and authority.
It's like a war cry or a bugle of chant?
It's both. To the strong I bring the guerdon, the prize, the reward of their strength. And to the weak I bring the armor of my force, I protect them. And to men who long, I carry their coveted joy, whatever joy it is that they long for persistently, she will bring them. And then she says that she's fortune, fate. Sometimes she's justifying the great and wise, everybody admires them. But then it's also a blessing when she tramples them with the armed heel of fate. She topples them down from their throne and they get trampled underfoot. That's also a blessing. Patricia, would you read?
My ear is lean to the cry of the oppressed. I topple down the thrones of tyrant kings. The cry comes from proscribed and hunted lives, appealing to me against a pitiless world. A voice of the forsaken and desolate, and the lone prisoner in his dungeon cell. Men hail in my coming the Almighty's force, or praise with thankful tears his Savior grace. I smite the Titan who bestrides the world, and slay the ogre in his blood-stained den. I am Durga, goddess of the proud and strong, and Lakshmi, queen of the fair and fortunate. I wear the face of Kali when I kill. I trample the corpses of the demon hordes. I am charged by God to do his mighty work. Uncaring, I serve his will, who sent me forth, reckless of peril and earthly consequence. I reason not of virtue and of sin, but do the deed he has put into my heart.
Thank you. We heard this wonderful chant, Sunil's composition for this these lines, as we were sitting waiting. She is Durga, Lakshmi, Kali. These are faces that, or aspects of her, of the Mother of Might. And she is just carrying out the work of the Lord. I don't care about danger. I don't care about earthly consequences. I don't reason whether it's something good or something bad. That's not my job. I just have to do the deed which the Lord has put in my heart.
He says she topples down the thrones of tyrant kings, and then later, I reckon not of virtue and of sin. So I wonder if she's the one who keeps them in power also, these dictators, until their time is done, I suppose. Huh?
As long as it may be necessary in order to guard the hierarchies.
So has the sympathy for those who are appealing
oppressed,
against
it. Yes.
The cry comes from proscribed and hunted lives. Proscribed means what? Surrounded.
Outcast.
somebody who's been officially labeled unfit, exiled, outcast.
I remember when I first read this, I thought it's strange that she's also Lakshmi, because we think of Lakshmi being from Mahalakshmi, and this evidently is a power of Mahakali. So. But I think these powers overlap, no?
They are on the same level, as it were. They're connected, yes. Uh-huh. So it's nice he puts them together like this, no? The goddess of the proud and the strong, and the queen of the fair and fortunate.
Yes.
These are closely connected.
Because in his letters he says that Vishnu can also be considered as creator.
Sorry?
Vishnu.
Vishnu can be what?
Considered also as creator.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah. So they overlap, the Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Well, sometimes your wealth can destroy you also.
Helmut.
I fear not for the angry frown of heaven. I flinch not from the red sword of hell. I crush the opposition of the gods. Cut down a million goblin obstacles. I guide man to the path of the divine and guard him from the red wolf and the snake. I set in his mortal hand my heavenly sword and put on him the breastplate of the gods. I break the ignorant pride of human mind and lead the thought to the wideness of the truth. I rend man's narrow and successful life and force his sorrowful eyes to gaze at the sun, that he may die to earth and live in his soul. I know the goal. I know the secret route. I have studied the map of the invisible worlds. I am the battlehead, the journey star.
Thank you. So it's not only the million goblin obstacles that she overcomes, she also crushes the opposition of the gods. There are times when the cosmic powers seem to want to keep us in our place, but with the help of the Mother of Might, we may be able to go further. Whatever it is, she's always fostering the implementation of the will of the Supreme Lord. So sometimes she does that by guiding and protecting, giving strength, but also she does it by breaking the ignorant pride of human mind, giving us a terrible shock, destroying everything that we thought that we knew, or that we, in order to lead the thought to a new wideness, the wideness of the truth. And sometimes she destroys our successful lives, our narrow and successful lives, and forces us, gives us despair, forces us to look at the sun, so that we may die to the earth, to the importance of material things, and wake up to the light of the soul.
So what is the red wolf and the snake?
You tell me, Betty. No, we know we can work it out. I'm sure you can work it out. No, I have a clue. But everybody's a bit sleepy this morning. I think you should wake up and think for yourselves a little bit.
You're just not nice, that's all.
Does the red wolf really exist in the physical?
I don't know whether it exists in the physical, but this is in the vital worlds. Aswapati met that same red wolf in the lower vital worlds. And the characteristic of the wolf is the way he tears at you with his teeth. the Vedic word means the terror. And the snake is less obvious, no? He's sneaking there in the grass and he poisons you, maybe before you've even noticed him. So these are hostile powers from whom we need protection. The wolves, yeah, I mean, real material wolves are very nice fellows and very important to the ecology and all that. But people in the past used to fear them very much. So she says, I'm the battle's head. She's leading this battle of the light against the darkness. And I'm the star of the journey, the guiding star which shows the way to go. So that is her mission. But then, just in the same way as the Madonna of Compassion, she is also aware of the obstacles to her mission. She describes those too. Would you read?
But the great obstinate world resists my word, and the crookedness and evil in man's heart is stronger than reason, profounder than the pit, and the malignancy of hostile powers, who struck me back the clock of destiny, and mightier seems than the eternal will. The cosmic evil is too deep to unroot. The cosmic suffering is too vast to heal. A few I guide who pass me towards the light. A few I save, the mass falls back unsaved. A few I help, the many strive and fail. But my heart, I am hardened and I do my work. Slowly the light grows greater in the east. Slowly the work progresses on God's road. His seal is on my task, it cannot fail. I shall hear the silver swing of heaven's gate when God comes out to meet the soul of the world.
Thank you. So Mother has said about Durga, about Kali, that they have to kill the Asura every year. You know, it goes on and on and on. It's never done completely. Or even that great divine power is not able to overcome the crookedness and evil in man's heart.
Crookedness.
It's the opposite of straightness. Straightforwardness, crookedness. And the malignancy of hostile powers, the ill will of those adverse powers. They're putting the clock back. You know, there's a time is fixed in the calendar of the unknown, but they keep manipulating the clocks.
Like that time when Sri Aurobindo was walking in his rooms.
And all the clocks stopped, yes.
I think the reason you have to kill them again and again, because these are only over mental powers, no? Only the supermind of the power that change things utterly.
Yes, we will see what Savitri says at the end of the canto. So she acknowledges that whatever she can do is limited, no? But nevertheless, I'm going to go on doing the work. And she, like the Mother of Compassion, is also confident. She has faith that God's seal is on her task. It cannot fail. And one day, I shall hear the silver swing of heaven's gates when God comes out to meet the world. Can hear that lovely sound of the silver gates. You going to read Tekeste? Praveen.
She spoke, and from the lower human world an answer, a black echo met her speech. A voice came through the spaces of the mind of the dwarf titan, the deformed chain god, who strives to master his nature's rebel stuff and make the universe his instrument. the ego of this great world of desire, claimed earth and the wide heavens for the use of man, head of the life it shapes on earth, its representative and conscious soul, and symbol of evolving life and force, and vessel of the Godhead that must be. A thinking animal, nature's struggling law, has made of her his nurse and tool and slave, and pays to her as wage and emolument, inescapably by a deep law in things. His heart's grief and his body's death and pain, his pains are her means to grow, to seek and feel. His death assists her immortality. A tool and slave of his own slave and tool, he praises his free will and his mastermind, and is pushed by her upon her chosen path. Possessor, he is possessed, and ruler, ruled. Her conscious automaton, her desires dupe. His soul is her guest, the sovereign mute, inert. His body, her robot. His life, her way to live. His conscious mind, her strong, revolted serf.
Thank you. So this is not like the man of sorrows. He's not just lying there and feeling helpful and helpless and resentful and unable to do anything. This fellow is dynamic. You know? He strives to master his nature's rebel stuff. He wants to achieve things. He wants to make the universe his instrument. But this is an ego-centered being. This is the ego of the great world of desire. A rajasic ego, claiming earth and the wide heavens for the use of man. He feels that he is free. He doesn't notice that he is actually ruled by nature. His soul is her guest, but it is inert and mute. It doesn't exercise its sovereignty. His body is nature's robot, a machine. His life is nature's way of living. His conscious mind is her serf, her bond slave, but he's revolted. He wants to be free, and he has the strength to become free also.
A tool and slave of his own slave and tool.
Yes.
How do you read that one?
Well, we are often ashamed of the way that man exploits nature, you know? We don't think about the good of the earth. We're just ready to use it. And we don't notice that we in turn are being used by nature for her purposes. Here, line 286, there's a nice definition of man, three. Three aspects. Man is the leader of life. It's the representative and conscious soul of the earth. It's the symbol. Humanity is the symbol of evolving light and force. And it's also the vessel. It contains the divinity that must be manifested.
Do you take this to mean that Shrivindo doesn't like this turn towards robotics and all that?
No.
Huh?
No, it's just an expressive word for a machine that does things. just that it's made to do. I don't think it means that he's against robotics.
I mean, the body of this Titan is the robot of nature.
Our human bodies are robots of nature, is what he says. Man.
But he here refers to this dwarf Titan.
No. That he here refers to man, a thinking animal.
Oh, I see.
Nature's struggling lord, who has made nature his nurse and tool and slave, and he has to pay her something. There has to be an exchange, no? Inescapably, by a deep law in things. He can't escape making a payment. So the payment he makes is the grief of his heart, the death and pain of the body. But she uses all that to grow. His death assists her immortality. There's this interchange going on between humanity and the rest of nature. So let's hear what he has to say. It's quite a long speech. We won't finish it today, I don't think. We can make a start. Andres. Line 305. The voice rose up.
The voice rose up and smote some inner sun. I am the hair of the forces of the earth. Slowly I make good my right to my estate. A growing godhead in her divinized mouth, I climb a claimant to the throne of heaven. The last born of the earth, I stand the first. Her slow millenniums waited for my birth. Although I live in time besieged by death, precarious owner of my body and soul, housed on a little speck amid the stars, for me and my youth the universe was made. Immortal spirit in the perishing clay, I am God still unevolved in human form. Even if he is not, he comes to me.
Shall we stop there? You've got a question, Don.
How do you smack this up?
How do you smite, yeah?
You
the living
smoke this
yeah.
Here it is
the past tense, yeah. It means that this voice is rising to attack something, an inner sun, a higher light, maybe the light of the inner mind. No? It's his attitude is one of aggression. And he claims, he makes quite high claims. I'm the heir, I'm the one who is supposed to inherit all the forces of the earth, all the physical material forces, earth as the material principle. They are mine, they are to come to me, and I am to rule them and control them. And slowly I'm making good my right to my estate. An heir inherits an estate, even if it's not a piece of land, it's still called an estate, whatever is left by the deceased person, all the assets. So slowly I'm earning my right to manage my own estate. I'm a growing godhead in her divinized mud, the divinized mud of the earth. I'm climbing higher and higher. I'm evolving. I'm going to claim the throne of heaven, the throne of the gods, the throne of the higher levels of consciousness. I'm the earth's last child, the last born. In fairy stories, it's often like that, that the little one, the last born, turns out to be the hero. He's the one who gets things done. No? In fairy stories, it's often like that. Yeah. And that's because if there are three sons, the first one is the body, and the second one is the life, and the third one is the mind. No? So. And sometimes there are seven children, and it's the little one who saves all the rest when they get lost in the forest. Or whatever. Yeah. These are all symbolic stories if we know how to read the symbols. I remember one of my students from long, long ago. He loved the story, which I think it's Tom Thumb, no? The little fellow. And he's the youngest of seven children, and the parents can't feed them, lead them out into the forest and lose them, leave them there. And he's the one who finds the way back, saves all the others. So that's, I mean, he loved that story, that's how he felt. That was his role for himself and his family. Very interesting, the stories that children choose as their favorite stories. So he's claiming all that, that I'm the last born and I'm going to be in charge of everybody else. For me and my use, the universe was made. And he recognizes something true about himself. He says, I'm an immortal spirit in the perishing clay. It's the body that dies. I am God. Stand still, unevolved in human form. That's actually true. And even if God doesn't exist, he will become in me. I will become God. So then he describes all the achievements of humanity.
What you just said, Madhavan, it goes together the inner sun that he has, how is connecting the inner sun and that he's conscious of his soul.
I am not sure about this inner sun. Mm-hmm. What did the other? What happened with the other gods, the other fellows? No, there it doesn't mention. Mm. But this inner sun, it must be an inner mind consciousness that is lighting this fellow as he speaks.
And the question would be also, and he said, I'm the last born of the earth, it is also this mind quality then?
Yeah, I'm the youngest child.
The youngest child, the mind quality.
So who's next, would you read? Top of page 512.
Sun and moon are lights upon my path. Air was invented for my lungs to breathe. Conditioned as a wide and lawless space for my winged chariot's wheels to cleave a road. The sea was made for me to swim and sail. A bear, my golden commerce on its back. It laughs cloven by my pleasures gliding. I laugh at its black stare of fate and death. The earth is my floor, the sky my living's roof. All was prepared for many a silent age. God made experiments with animal shapes. Then only when all was ready, I was born. I was born weak and small and ignorant. A helpless creature in a difficult world, traveling through my brief years with death at my side. I have grown braver than nature, wiser than God. I have made real what she never dreamed. I have seized her powers and harnessed for my work. I have shaped her metals and new metals made. I will make glass and raiment. Make iron velvet water and break the stone. Like God in his astuce of artist skill, mold from one primal plasm protean forms, in single nature multitudinous lives. All that imagination can conceive, in mind intangible, remold anew, in matters plastic, solid and concrete.
Mm, thank you. So there is some truth in all this, no? But it's an egoistic truth, which we shall see emerge when we read further.
It's a
yeah. But he's speaking, representing man. He's claiming earth and the wide heavens for the use of man. He's representing this great world of desire. That's in a way the human world, isn't it? The illustration is interesting. It's one of our modern men surrounded by all his appliances, but he's chained to them. He can't escape from all his inventions. So everything's made for us, for humanity. The sun and the moon, the air, the sea, the earth. Everything's been prepared for us. The whole of evolution has been prepared for our benefit. And now I've come and I've grown greater than nature, wiser than God. I have taken control and I've done all kinds of things that nature was not clever enough to do. And I will do even more. And he explains how he's going to do it. He's going to find that primal plasm that he can make anything out of it. You know, he can make glass and clothing out of milk, make iron, velvet, make water into unbreakable stone. By manipulating the atoms, probably all this is possible. So he says, I'm like God in his astuce, his cleverness. Yes, Andres?
I don't understand how is the link between the Madonnas and,
yes.
It's
a kind of negative reflection. Does that help?
Yeah, when you were saying that it represented tamas, rajas, and sattvas.
Yes, so he represents the rajasic element. No?
The reply or also the goddess?
Yes, I get into trouble if I say that Durga is rajasic. You know, I shouldn't say that. But she represents strength, movement, dynamism, power. So I was happy that I found once in Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo says that what here in the manifestation, these are these qualities of tamas, rajas, and sattva. They are, we can say, representations, distorted, perverted representations, or maybe not even distorted and perverted, probably that's going too far, but representations in the manifested world of a quality of perfect calm and stability, perfectly pure dynamis, a perfect state of harmony and light on the higher levels. So that's somehow the goddesses are representing the higher forms, the pure divine forms. And these echoes represent their distorted forms in the human world. Something like that. Maybe somebody will one day be able to grasp it and formulate it better than I can. Yes?
Shantam also said about Durga. She's called, he came to meet Mother in his bathroom. And it's a conversion, integrated your psychic being to the Supreme. Mm. And when the people do some puja for her, they don't like. She said that to the mother. But Shobindo, I put in the news in the, this week, Durga represents the protection of the mother. Mm.
The mother's protection, power of protection.
And Shobindo described men. Mm. When you don't live truly, etc., etc. Mm. It's a very small sentence, but it's very, very important for the aspect of Durga. But she is the first goddess converted. Conversion is the soul to the Supreme. And Mother described in Ashada 1961 many, many parts of her action in the world. But Mother do play to her.
I think Mother convinced Durga not to destroy people for their bad behavior,
no?
But to love them. Transform them by love.
Yeah, I was just thinking it's very appropriate that today we have all these beautiful divine love flowers here. I think Mother used to distribute these during the puja days. She would, there are 4 days, no? What are the 4 days? Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati. So these come during this puja time now. The Navaratri time. It's this week.
Mm.
And yes, to this week we have Mahasaraswati, but the others also are going on. Mm. The day of Durga and Kali and so on. Mm. So she would wear special clothing, symbolic colors, and come down and bless and give offerings, and these times she distributed these flowers, pomegranate flowers. Sorry.
And in Ashram, you have near the bed of the mother, you have a chair of Durga with.
I think it will be changed for each of the days, the decorations,
exactly.
No?
Then
I can say that tomorrow. In the film presentation, I will show a film about these 4 aspects, and the text from the mother from Shirdi.
So yes, in that little book, The Mother, Sri Aurobindo has explained the highest significance of these embodiments or aspects of the mother. But he says they are not the only ones. There are other aspects. And,
But also Lakshmi help. But one moment, the humanity won't want.
That's what she's saying,
yeah,
no?
Exactly. And he turned, that's all. But not fight at all. He just turned and go.
Yeah, the great obstinate world resists my word.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but Savitri is going to do something beyond all this.
Yeah,
no? So this is a kind of build-up to that.
Some aspect of
so, shall we close and listen to Mother reading these passages?
The last one.
Spurred the harmony of her puissant voice. O Savitri, I am thy secret soul. I am Durga, goddess of the proud and strong, and Lakshmi, Queen of the fair and fortunate. I'll wear the face of Kali when I kill. I trample the corpses of the demon hall. I shall hear the silver swing of heaven's gate when the god comes out to meet the soul of the world.
Thanks to Shervindor.